So I'll stop here. And if you have any questions, then we can discuss. Any question? Yes.
I guess, you know, one of the criticisms people sometimes have about Buddhism is that Buddhists sit in this cushion and, you know, don't do anything else. And I think, if I understand you correctly, you're telling us to get off the cushion and get out into the world and help make things better.
Yeah, I think sitting on cushion is also very important, you know, but we should not neglect that part too. Mm-hmm. And while giving importance sitting on cushion, we should also, you know, at least try to, you know, go out and help in any way whatever we can, because while sitting on cushion, we are preparing that, you know, engaged journey in a mentally. And then when we are out in the society helping someone or engaging with someone in social activities or in educational activities or in whatever activities, so we are very likely, because we are all humans, we are likely to meet with some bad people, some difficult people, some stubborn people, you know, like that. Right? So at such times, you know, we should be mindful of what we have done what we did when we were on the cushion. That is, you know, on the cushion we prepared our motivation. So in the actual practice, we are there because still we are humans, you know. So it's being letting our mind not fall into the situations of anger and, you know, hatred and like that. So in this way, I really encourage, you know, our Buddhist brothers and sisters, you know, to, you know, try to be, you know, whenever it's possible, because and in this way our motivation, spiritual practices are also translated into the action. And for example, when we look at Buddha himself, Buddha Shakyamuni himself, we get to see that Buddha Shakyamuni himself, you know, visiting the sick monks and nuns and giving care to them. So that is, you know, that is an example what we need to take from him, you know, like that. No question? Yes?
I come from a Christian community that's very committed to that perspective, but what I see lacking, and I'm wondering, we need another Gethsemane encounter, but is from Buddhism, when you are focused on doing, then I begin to do for you, and there's a paternalistic, which in this country we fall into. We have many resources and we have great generosity, but we have a tendency to believe I'm sitting here and you're there and I'm doing for you. How can we break through that? That's my concern, is what I see, that this compassion, it's not that there's an absence of caring, but there's an absence of seeing you and I are together, that interdependence, that I'm not doing it for you, I'm doing it for me and for you and for all beings. I think the practice, the Christian part is good.
Yeah. I think from the Buddhist perspective, one way of engaging, for example, engaging in this kind of generosity, it is said that in the Madhyamaka Avatara, it says, Jimba Jinja Lambo 懂得懂认识。第一 the subject, for example, ourselves, the material, whatever you are going to give, the, and the object that the beneficiary. These three should be seen as empty of inherent existence. In other words, the subject, the doer, should also be seen as lacking inherent existence. And if we are able to see this, then many impure emotional motivations, such as feeling of arrogance, such as feeling of I'm the best, you know, something like that. Such things will not arise because you have contemplated yourself as lacking inherent existence. And then when we see the material, whatever, you know, for example, if we give some food, material as in lacking inherent existence, then that again also makes that, you know, sometimes when we give some kind of food, we think, while giving, there is chance of being, there is chance of having miserliness. No, even while giving, mind is very strange, you know. Mind is so strange, you know, it's so strange. If we were to graph the mind, you know, make a graph, you know, have a graph, just incredible, you know. Mind is so strange. It is. So while giving, you might, the moment when you are going to give this, right, in the first moment you do not have any kind of miserliness, but when it is about to pass to them, you might say, oh, this is very good, oh, how about, you know, I might keep it like that. So in this way, if you are able to contemplate on the fact that the material, whatever I am giving, lacks inherent existence, then, you know, will be able to be freed from miserliness at that time. So a greater intention to give will arise. And then when we hand it over to the person, you know, the needy person, that is the beneficiary. So there is, you know, when we see a beneficiary person, a handsome looking guy, you know, there's chance of having attachment. Mind is very interesting, you know, very interesting. When we see a very dirty person, we might not even like to hand it over, you know, respectfully. We might even like to throw it, you know, like that. So when we are able to see that person lacking inherent existence, then all these distorted thoughts will not arise in us. So our object, our practice of generosity becomes pure from the very beginning, pure in the middling, pure in the end. That is called as, you know, Jimba, Jinja, Lambo, Tongbe Ong. So that is in the, you know, first chapter of that is the first chapter of what is called as, you know, this the Madhyamaka Avatara. In the first chapter, there's the chapter of what is called as practice of generosity. Generosity is there, chapter. So it's very detailed. So this way we need to, and in meditation, when we are cushioned on the cushion, we need to contemplate these things, you know, that. And then when we are actually at, you know, engaging in some kind of, you know, social activity, we need to be mindful of the ultimate nature of yourself, the action and the object, and then of course the beneficiary like that. So then our mind will not be kind of carried away by, you know, by distorted attitudes like that. So mind is very, very strange, you know, very, very strange. If we were to graph, and at the moment by moment it changes. It changes. That is why, you know, the mind training is needed, like mind training. Stability is needed. Stability. When we, for example, even when we do some kind of meditation, our mind goes right away. So if you are doing some kind of meditation, you might think, oh, what is others thinking about me? What is so it's just so that is why in the text it says that, you know, dharma kirti says that jubo nyurchi limbuta, it is so momentary that, you know, the pace of the mind is so momentary, instant, that we tend to feel that it is just one, continuity, just one block of mind. But it is not like that. Not like that. It is, especially with the thoughts, it is not like that. Thoughts, again, when we think about thought, it is again very, very, just goes everywhere, you know, thoughts. That's why I think Dhammakirti deals very, very, you know, detailed way in, you know, explaining. We were discussing with Anila yesterday, you know, the term, the valid cognition, you know, sama, that is the valid. When we see something, we always have a tendency, whatever I see, something to be valid, something to be inconvertible, right? Incontrovertible. Is that true? We need to find out how we perceive. What is behind that perception? How that perception is arising in me, the causes, the immediate cause, the former cause and conditions, the original cause and conditions, like that. For example, when we go in a mall, let's say, interestingly, the malls, when I go there, you know, I always get amazed, you know, the mall is the manifestation of the American craving. It is there, you know, it is there, right? so when we look at the things, right, for example, when you go to buy a car, right, when you go buy a car, our reactions change moment by moment. When you look at the car, this car dealer comes to you, gives you tea or, you know, coffee, or receives you, you know, they are so skillful, right? They're so skillful. They want you buy. So in the beginning, what you see is, you see so many cars. You see, oh, this. So maybe you have some, you know, maybe in your own mind you have something to buy, you know, maybe you have planned to buy something. But you see, this is a good car. That's it. And then you are kind of, you know, perplexed what to buy. My agenda is to buy this, but there is so more, you know, on the shelf, in that showroom. So what's your reaction like that at that time? Your thought has kind of, you know, dispersed, and it is gone to almost every car they have. You know? You wanted to buy everyone if you have money. That's your thought. And the next moment, you say, oh my, how much I can pay, you know. Then how much car loan I can get. Or how much in my bank, like that. So then, you know, that thought, which is so dispersed, right, it becomes kind of a, how should I say, it's kind of harnessed, channelized, you know, it becomes smaller, 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 smaller. So object, with in the beginning, in your thought, all the cars are in your object. But now, you will come down to maybe two, three cars like that. Objects have become numbered. And then, it is a moment by moment change in your thought. It is thought. And then you eventually maybe pinpoint to one car. At that time, you know, what is your thought like? What is your craving like? What is your desire like? It's very interesting attachment like that. You appreciate, you might appreciate the design, you might not appreciate the color, you might appreciate the tire, you might not appreciate the steering wheel. So many thoughts go. You want to check every bit of it, you know. If possible, you want to go underneath and check the nuts and, you know, the chassis and like that, right? These are our thoughts. So then, when you are, then you think, oh, this is a good car. Oh, I might choose this. At that time, you see this car is the best car. It's the best car over there. It's the best car. And then slowly, slowly, you will go and bargain and, you know, then buy like that. And in this way, then again, the attachment before you buy, actually buy, and then attachment after you have bought are different. Before you bought, you know, there is attachment. But if something goes wrong with that attachment, you know, something goes wrong with that car, you are not so, you will not be very much disturbed. Of course, you will disturb. But you will feel disturbed, but you, because you wanted to buy it, right? You wanted to own it. But still, it is not yet owned by you. That is why if something happens to that car, you will not be very much disturbed. You will disturb, but sometimes you will not be disturbed even, you know, depending on how, you know, it's akin, our thought. But once you have started to own it, then it is my car. Now you have leveled it. You have put in your mind. It's mine. So you will not want to have anything to happen to this car. It's your new baby. Right? So you take this new baby to your home, right? So on the way, when you drive it, so many thoughts will arise in you, you know, while you are driving. What will my friends say about this car? What my wife or husband will say about this car? What my kids will say about this car? You know, like that. So then you will have so many thoughts about engines and about, you know, the more, about those, you know, loans and all this. These flashes of thoughts are just countless. Just with one single object. So how many things we have in our house? Yeah. Right. That's how we need to look into our, you know, mind. How we think in this way. And then really we'll have some, we'll give some moment to think more inwardly. Say, oh, I've been thinking in this way so many times, right? But what have I benefited, right? Have I given some thought to my mind? Have I given some thought to how I exist? Who am I? What's my mind like? And then really it comes to the practice of doing some kind of mental training. Any question? Yes.
I'm working in the military as your 12-year-old. In his life already, he's killed somebody, and he's done many very bad things. And yesterday I spoke with him, and he's very hopeless. Being that he's 12, he doesn't have a huge understanding of life.
Yeah.
He has no experience, other than what he's...
Yes.
Do you have anything I could pass to him that would give him something to think about? Something simple? You know, I think about what I do, and I'm very conscious and mindful and trying to very different. All the time trying to be better. But for someone who's 12 who has no understanding of Buddhism or any kind of compassion or love, it's like starting at zero.
Is he interested in reading some books, very easy books or not? Some children are very interested in reading some books, right?
If some,
yeah, then maybe we might be able to find, you know, some, you know, books which have some messages of peace and, you know, which have some messages of compassion and like that. That is one possibility. Let him read, you know. Pushing him will not make him any better. Make him a little bit up. Make him understand, you know, through some skillful means, such as, you know, letting him or taking him to somewhere where there is some kind of, you know, the counseling and things like that.
Yes,
like that, you know. So maybe I think such things can help. And then
something I might do.
Maybe you can do. Maybe receive, you know, instructions from Venerable, you know. The Panglin, I think it's very, very powerful.
Yes.
And in the Panglin practice, what helps you is that many times, you know, when we see such people, you know, we really feel kind of ourselves kind of even hopeless, you know, to the point that I've done so much, but it is not benefiting him or in any way. But in Tonglen, what we will be able to understand is that I'm not going to be in any way hopeless. I'm going to, even if he's not improving in this way, I'm going to send my positive energies to him. Go on sending positive energies to him, you know, just go from your mind, sending positive energies. Even if he is not going to improve, but my positive energy is going to, I'm going to send him, you know, through breathing and through, you know, meditation like that. That will certainly encourage you to be more, you know, helpful with that person, with this man, this boy, you know, this boy. And then mainly maybe, you know, also this, as you are since you are doing counseling, you know, maybe there's some other ways, you know, from your side too, you know, like, you know, doing some other, you know, there's some modern ways of, you know, doing like that. That may be possible. But is it your child or?
No, I'm working in an inpatient psychiatric.
Yeah.
Very depressed.
Yeah, depressed, right? Yeah. But there must be some ways, you know, for example, even if maybe it is related to his physical illness, you know, some kind of physical illness, then that may be possible for him to have a, you know, thorough checkup and like that, you know, or, you know, ask him frankly what really could be from his family problem, you know. Some children really react very badly, violently, because they have some problem in the family, you know. In many cases it's like that, especially when the parents, you know, quarrel, when the parents fight, and then the child just becomes completely disillusioned, and they think that, you know, they they needed to get out of that disillusionment. And to in order to get out of this disillusionment, they act very crazy. So maybe he has some, you know, family background, you know, situation too, you know, like that. Yeah. Mainly, I think because you practice Dharma, it is wonderful center to send him, you know, positive energies. Yeah, positive energies. Yeah. Huh? That's it. Yeah.
So that he may continue to lead us and others along the path to enlightenment.